You're listening to episode 251 of Women Worldwide. What is gender bias in communications? Have you seen gender bias in your workplace? And would you be able to identify gender bias in daily communication? Men and women have to work together to address gender bias because equity matters. My special guest today has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Happy holidays and happy new year. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Women Worldwide. We are kicking off 2020 with more amazing guests. You know our goal. We are changing lives one story at a time. And with all of the challenges that you face, we never want you to feel alone. And that's why we bring guests to you who offer really good advice and actionable tips. And just reflecting back on 2019, I want to thank all of you for showing up, for sharing the stories of our guests, for letting us know how you feel and how you're doing and what really helps you. So just know we are listening and keep that feedback coming. Okay, let's get to today's topic and special guest. So the topic is gender bias in communications. How do you spot gender bias? What does it look like in the workplace? How can you prevent it? And how can men and women work together so that there's equity, because equity matters? Well, I've got a special guest today who can answer all of these questions and more. Joining me on the show is a wonderful colleague, a woman that I've known for a while now, and someone I call a dear friend. It's Susan Freeman. And Susan is the founder and CEO of Freeman Means Business. Her goal is to help women in business communicate effectively with the world and to help men communicate effectively with women in business. Now, Susan, aside from being founder and CEO of her company, she also creates events called Bubbles, Bites, and Bits of Wisdom. She's the host of a podcast called Wonder Women in Business. And she's also the co-author of this book right here that she just wrote with Ross Fishman. And the book is called The Ultimate Women Associates Law Firm Marketing Checklist, the renowned step-by-step, year-by-year process for lawyers who want to develop clients. As you can tell, I could go on and on about Susan, but I think it's best that she shares her journey with you. Susan, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Deirdre. I'm so glad to be here. This has been a long time coming. Thank you, everyone, for listening in and tuning in. I hope that we will compel you to do something new and different in communications in your workplace and in your home as well after this podcast.
Oh my gosh, new and different. Absolutely. And Susan, speaking of communication and especially women in business, how did you get to a place where you knew that you wanted to help women communicate effectively and that you were going to launch a company and be an entrepreneur?
That's a great question. And oddly, no one has ever asked me what brought me to where I am today before. That's so odd, don't you think?
Yeah. But I'm so weird on the what to ask.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, the reason that I started this business was there was a need, first of all. It was about my passion coming together with the need that I personally experienced. So I've been in the corporate world and in the legal world for years and years and years, more than 25 years or so. And I saw that things in the 1990s were still the same as they are today, or vice versa, and not much had changed. It was really disheartening. So I decided that, you know, we need to stop changing women per se, or trying to get them to change, and stop changing men per se and trying to get them to change, but explain how we're different, and that both the way we communicate, though different, is valid. And so change the operating system. So my goal was to change the operating system, whether it's a law firm, whether it's a corporation, an engineering firm, a university, a government, or a municipality, what have you. So it was my passion for what I do, my passion for equity and fairness, my love of communications, not just PR and crisis comms, but communication theory, which is far different. I love all things comms theory and influence, persuasion, motivation, psychographics. All that came together in this past year and a half, and I decided year and a half ago, this needs to happen. We need to come at this from many, many fronts, and it needs to happen.
It does. It needs to change. The fact that you said that what you saw in the 1990s, right, then, is still happening now, but it's not always easy to change that operating system. So there's a lot I could unpack from what you said, but maybe you could start with, what are some of the different styles that we should be aware of between men and women in communication?
Well, why don't I start with a few ways that we do differ?
Yeah.
So women, like you'll see me use my hands throughout this podcast because we're on video. So women use a lot more body language. We're more open with our body language. We use hand motions. We use head nodding.
Yeah.
We tend to use more inflection. Men, on the other hand, are much more, they tend to stay verbal, not use as much. They're not as open. They don't move their hands around as much. They don't use a lot of body language, nodding right. heads and so forth. Another way that we differ in how we communicate is apologizing. So
yes.
There's a lot of bad rap out there about the apology and how much women apologize. And I'm going to be provocative here and say, you know, we don't have to apologize for apologizing so much. If people would listen to why and the context of the apology, that's different. So let's say, for example, Deirdre, you say, team, I'm sorry the project didn't go as planned. We have to start from the drawing board again, but let's all roll our sleeves up and get going on this. You are not taking blame for the project's failure. You are simply establishing an emotional balance and letting everyone know we're in this together. We can do this. This is empathy.
Yeah.
So that's a positive use of the apology. But men only apologize when they are taking blame, and even then, not very often. So if he hears Deirdre, the team leader, saying, I'm sorry, the project went wrong, all he's hearing is she's to blame.
It's Deirdre's fault.
Yes, it's Deirdre's fault.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Another way that women apologize is, I'm sorry that, you know, this happened to you, or, you know, so say you lose a loved one, or we're certainly not taking blame in that way. It's, again, to establish an emotional balance,
right?
And to empathize with the other person. Again, men don't do that as often. A third way we might differ in our communications is compliments. Think about it. Oh, Deirdre, your hair looks beautiful today. I love when you wear your hair down. It frames your face so nicely. Men never say those things to one another. Rarely.
No.
I shouldn't use hyperbole. They rarely, rarely. Oh, what a great new haircut you have. Or where did you get those shoes? They're fantastic. Or that purse is beautiful. You know, those are the things that women are known to. Those are some of the ways that we differ. Women communicate differently than men in that way.
Susan, one thing that I noticed about men and women, you know, you mentioned that women use their hands a lot, which I definitely do, but there's something about taking up space. Have you ever noticed in the boardroom, or I saw it in my classrooms, women would be very neat and tucked and everything would be in order, and men would be more spread out, maybe doing this, popping an elbow and putting their feet up if they could, right? Is that a thing?
Yeah. Just think about when you ride the public transit, the subway. There have been many articles written about man spreading. You know, they'll take up two seats. Seriously, living large, sitting large. I think part of that is we're raised to be constrained. We cross our legs at the ankles. We don't own the room. Like, I think metaphorically we need to learn. I know that metaphorically we need to learn to own the room. We need to play big, be large, own our stories, share, project, include others. But I think in our day-to-day behaviors, the way we're raised is to, you know, keep your legs together, cross your legs at the ankles. And I know this is just an analogy for a much bigger situation that we face. You know, you're talking about playing big in your job, in your life, in your, you know, corporate setting, owning the situation, the meeting, leading with large charge. We don't tend to do that. We do move a lot. We do have certain stances. If you've ever studied any of Kara Hale Alter's work,
She's amazing.
You'll see how, for example, men will stand with their feet shoulder width apart. That's large. Yeah. Women don't do that. We would think that was a little unladylike in the old days. So yeah, we were raised.
That's that feet planted on the ground, face forward, almost a military stance without your hands behind your back.
Right.
That says something. Right. That's commanding a presence too.
It is very strong. It's a strong stance, if you will. But women can have a strong stance as well. We stand hip width apart, you know, own the room, hands on the hips, power poses, as Amy Cuddy might call them. We need to learn to communicate effectively in owning our own story and being our own highest and best selves. And then I am working on changing the world so that we accept women who own their story and who are assertive and are aggressive and don't get punished for that verbal and nonverbal communication style. That's one of the things I'm talking about when I say change the operating system and not necessarily tell women all the things they're doing wrong.
Right.
Most cases, they're doing nothing wrong. It's simply that
the system itself.
Correct. What's wrong? Like, so for example, if Deirdre's in a meeting and she's leading her team and she says, oh, I've come up with the solution to the problem with which we've been grappling for a month now. I'd like you to look it over. Tell me, have I missed anything? What did I get wrong? Is there, you know, are there gaps in this analysis? My solution is going to fly. You know, how applicable is it? And some man in the room would hear Deirdre saying this, and she's, you know, incorporating her team, collaborating, inviting input and feedback. And he might say to himself, she's not ready for a promotion. She's indecisive. She seeks validation from others. She's not a leader. When really, truly, those are transformational leadership skills. And you're very much a leader using the EQ and the collaborating and all. So in transformational leadership, every person on the team plays a critical role, regardless of your title or pay grade. In traditional old style leadership, you've got very hierarchical assignments and the leader, so to speak, so-called, would come in and delegate and everyone would take their part of the solution and go and do. But do you see how that can lose? This is why we have some disparity in the workplace, because people in power are the ones evaluating and giving raises, bonuses, new opportunities. The women are not making it up to the managerial and higher up positions. This is one of the many reasons why.
So, Susan, because this is happening in the workplace and just what you stated about men in positions, how do you change this? I mean, that's the golden question that everyone has to answer, right? But what can women are going to play a role and men are going to play a role? Is this simply just keep educating and take and hope it takes hold? Or what can we do?
Hope is not a strategy. I always say that. Hope is not a strategy. So first step is to raise awareness, correct? So that's correct, why I correct. Do what I do for a living. I travel the country and I give these talks, keynotes, as well as workshops that are interactive. Those are very effective because men and women are involved and they role play and they empathize. They listen more than they talk and they understand the other person's point of view. They ask a lot of questions more than make a lot of statements.
That must be very eye-opening.
Oh, yeah. I love it. My favorite part about everything that I do is when white men over 50 come up to me and say, thank you. Thank you for explaining how we got to where we are. Thank you for doing so in a way that didn't throw me under the bus. And thank you for including me in the solution to what I now see as a real problem.
Oh, I like that.
So,
I like that.
Yeah, they love that. So raising awareness is step one, but then having tips and tools and tactics that you can put in place. Of course, step two, changing behaviors. You know that we can't change behaviors until thoughts and attitudes and beliefs are impacted. So if I change my mind because of something you've taught me, then I will choose to change my own behaviors. And we can do this not just culture change. You know how people right. say, let's change the culture. That's a myth. You can't do that. You can't just go in and with one fell swoop change all of the culture. You can't have a corporate retreat and have the executive committee come back with this new information and expect the rest of the company to lead by their example. You have to start with one, like you said at the beginning of your show, one mind at a time, one person at a time.
Right.
Top down, bottom up, inside out, outside in. Everyone creates this change.
That's really interesting. Susan, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts just for a moment. I want to shift focus to talk about empathy, which you mentioned, and leadership, and this balance of EQ, emotional quotient, and IQ. As you know, I've embarked on a year plus long journey to research millennials and how they show up to their conversations, how they want to be perceived, what they value, but most of all, what they expect in interactions and communication from the people that they look up to, and especially the leaders in their life. And as I've been doing research, empathy stands out in a huge bucket. So before I share a test where women worldwide listeners can go and find out how empathetic they are, I want to ask you a question. What can leaders do to become more empathetic? Are there steps that they can take?
Sure. I think that people who do what we do for a living sometimes take it for granted and say, well, of course there are things they can do and they should be doing them regularly. But you'd be shocked to find how some of the simplest ideas or suggestions or solutions blow people away. Like some of the men that I train especially are like, wow, I never thought about that. But that leads right back to how men and women communicate differently. So one solution might be to ask questions. Stop talking. Start listening. Whenever we're talking, we're not allowing ourselves an opportunity to learn something new. And we're not learning what's most important to the person sitting across from us. Which, if you understand the importance of building relationships, that starts with uncovering what the other person's needs are, what their feelings might be, what their objectives and goals are, what they're trying to achieve. So if we would ask meaningful questions and then listen, then weave what we learn into the narrative of this relationship. When we respond, show that we understand, maybe share a story that proves that we relate, something we've been through that's similar. Then this person will know us, like us, and trust us. And that's how business gets done. You want to do work with people you know, like, and trust. So I think one power tool would be questions, listening. Another power tool is people who are in leadership positions need to recognize that evaluations are not fair. Women and men get evaluated, and when the name is at the top of the evaluation sheet and the criteria is all filled out and the responses are there, we see that even if the outcomes are exactly the same, once the evaluator finds one is a woman, another is a man, the man inevitably gets more money, gets a raise, a pay raise, a title, whatever, the kudos, whatever. When we remove the names from the tops of the evaluation forms and you look at the criteria and then you look at the outcomes and you see they're same or similar, those two people both get the same merit, benefit, raise, title, promotion, whatever that might be. And that's a problem, that we don't have enough blind evaluation. So we need objective criteria. We need to stop putting must have and nice to haves in our job descriptions and only put must haves. Why? Because women self-select. Now, this is something we need to stop doing. We look at a job description or an opportunity for promotion. We see what's required. We say, I can do most of that, but I've not done all of that. So I'm not going to apply. But a man will look at that and say, I can do all of that and apply.
Even if they only do 60%.
Correct. That's the number. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So the sad fact is that means that we are, again, in part, it's our fault, but we are, again, not getting those higher up positions because we're not going for it. We're not owning our story. We're not leaning in, as Cheryl might say.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, thank
another
you.
Tool.
Oh, I
one
was
more
just,
tool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that on the empathy part, that Women Worldwide listeners can go and take the Feel First test. And Feel stands for face fears, engage with empathy, use ethics and good judgment, and unleash the love. And the test actually scores how well you do in each area and gives suggestions, exercises on how you can increase Feel. So listeners, if you would go to feelfirsttest.com, take the test, see how you do, and you can always shout out to me and let me know. And Susan, thank you for answering the empathy part. And I would love for you to continue with more of the tools because this is really
well,
important.
Well, the third tool was actually listen with empathy and not judgment.
Oh, there so. You go.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that too many people listen with the intent of further speaking on what they want to say or preparing what they want to say versus being open and raw and vulnerable to what might come out of the other person's mouth. It's okay not to know. It's okay that in your questioning someone else, you learn something new about them. And in doing so, you may just well learn something new about yourself.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what you're speaking to is the active listening. So many times I think professionals think that, oh yeah, I'm listening as they're typing something on their smartphone. Or, you know, I always use the example of when I walk into my husband's office and I start to tell him something and he's still typing and he goes, I'm listening.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Oh, I must be married to the same man because I'll tell you, he's like, I'm typing a work email or something. And I'm like, then you can't possibly be fully engaged in listening.
Exactly.
You know,
because,
so,
right. When you're asking questions, you're showing that you're interested. And also your whole body language changes.
Right.
Too, you start, you do have some head nodding and you're leaning in maybe
you're
to
engaged.
The conversation. Yes. Your entire you is engaged. So,
and if the other party is not listening intently, even when you're asking the questions, they're missing out on the power of the question.
Right.
You know, it's just words otherwise. Same thing when they're making a statement. If you're not looking me in the eye and engaged with me in a meaningful way, you're just talking.
Exactly.
You're not making an impact. You're not engaged. We're not connecting. That's what I tell my husband when he's, you know, it's totally, right now it's fantasy football season. So I'm like, are you really writing a work email or are you picking your team?
Don't tell me you're working. I know it's fantasy.
Right, right.
So funny. I'm constantly grabbing the clicker whenever Mark walks away to turn on something else. He comes back. Hey, what happened?
I don't know.
I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
I have no clue. Well, okay. Let's dive back into our discussion around the gender bias and some of the things that we were talking about before. But you know what? Actually, I do want to just mention that you just finished an unbelievable event called Empowered Women. And it was Empowered Women in Business, Empowered Women, Empower Men and Women in Business.
Right. And that's kind of a tongue twister, but it was important to me that we ensure men that there is not only a place for them and the solutions to the problems that we face, but an equal place. Like, it's critically important. I had one man ask me, a managing partner of a large law firm ask me, he said, you know, it's 60-40 in ABA stats, you know, men to women. Do you want it to be 60-40 the other way? And I knew this was a gotcha question. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I don't like the way it is now, not on par, we're not equal, it's not, there's no equity in the legal arena, why would I like that same problem later, just if the roles were reversed? I mean, it was a total gotcha. And I said, you know, women are making progress, but progress is not parity. And I'm looking for parity. So that means 50-50, regardless of gender. So he was pleased with my answer. I made it a point to talk about how women in business can empower not only other women, but men as well, because we need men. We need men to mentor. We need men to sponsor. We need men to change the evaluation criteria, like I talked about earlier. Get rid of the nice to haves and focus only on the must haves.
Yeah.
Because women don't apply to the nice to haves, you know, oh, we don't have that, so we're not going to apply. Just ask for the must haves. Men need to also understand that it's like they speak Italian and we speak French. Both languages are valid and important, but if you don't speak that other language, communication can't possibly take place or effective communication.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So men are a huge part of this solution.
I agree. And one of the reasons why men come on Women Worldwide is because if a man has really great information to share that will benefit all professionals, including women, then they're a part of the solution. We want men to be a part of it. So
it's like a puzzle. You can't solve the puzzle without all the pieces, and they're as much a piece of the puzzle as we.
Exactly. So how do you feel coming off your first big event? Because it was a big one.
It was a big one. It was. So I do these events. So let me just explain to your listeners. I do one thing for a living, and I do two things for a giving.
Yeah.
The two things for giving include a podcast of my own, and then it's called Wonder Women in Business.
And it's fantastic. The way that you are highlighting and lifting so many women.
Well, I give them a chance to tell their story, and the questions are deeply meaningful. I don't know the answers to the questions before we get on the show, so that way it's authentic. The second thing I do for giving are these events, and it started out monthly, smaller events for about 30 people in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I've shone a light on women in business. So the speaker is always a woman who needs, deserves, should have the opportunity to tell her story. Women need to be heard and respected and feel like they're heard and respected. And so I give them that opportunity to tell their story. So we open up with welcoming remarks from whatever client has hired me to do this, or in the case in the early stages, I would host these at a law firm that would, you know, just give me their venue, if you will. And the managing partner would welcome clients and visitors, people who've, you know, wanted to attend, attendees. And the guest speaker would do a TED Talk, 20 minutes or less. And then I would host an unconscious bias exercise. It's a fantastic exercise. And then we would have food and wine pairings and network. And it was wonderful. It was from 5:30 to 8:30. Well, this turned into something much bigger. People who would attend asked, could you do this at my company? Could you do this at, you know, my headquarters in New York? And so it has grown, and I've been doing them across the country.
Wonderful.
And then, yeah, and I decided with this one, the inaugural big event, Empowered Women 2019, to have, I think we had, what, 16 speakers, you included, Deirdre?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, great. You are amazing. Deirdre opened our program. It was fantastic with her Feel First Communications and her millennial research. It was really great. I've gotten nothing but positive. Like, it's been beyond my wildest imaginings, the feedback on this program. So it was a full day in the Bay, and we had one woman after another with a wonderful MC, Scott Love, in between each, introducing each. High energy, fast paced, beautifully vulnerable, just terrific. It was just, it brought tears to so many people's eyes to see that women who are successful in business can still and should still be vulnerable, share their vulnerabilities, share their authentic stories, share the challenges that they've been through. I'm so tired of hearing men and women get up on stage and talk about how, you know, great they are, or famous they are, or what their product or service does, or, you know, it's time to tell the story of you.
To go deeper and to be real.
Go deeper. Be real and feel, to play into your work.
Thank you.
I mean, seriously, be real and feel, because that's what people relate to. When I see Deirdre Breckenridge on the stage, unless she is real and speaks to me in an authentic way, I feel like, wow, she's so amazing. How do I get there? I don't have any tools to get there. I don't know how she got where she is. You know, how can I relate to that? I don't. But when she gets up there and she tells me her story, the things, the challenges that she's overcome, and the concerns and obstacles that she's faced, and how she dealt with those, then I see hope for me. As an audience member, I can do that too. And I'm learning from her how she did. And that's why I do these events. And next year's will be in Houston, and the year after in Chicago. And
have Houston and Chicago mapped out.
I already have speakers lined up for both.
You are just like on it.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It was an amazing day. When you say, what's your thought on the day?
Oh, well, first of all, the knowledge was absolutely incredible. All of the women were just so inspiring. And I don't know, I felt a lot of energy in the room. So I was not only feeling energized that day and so grateful for all of the women, and there were men there too around me, but that energy, Susan, lasted. Like, I'm still riding high when I think about that event. And that's the best thing. That's all you could really ask for in an event, is to feel this way.
Right.
So I love
the connection. I think that the vibration, the level of energy, the level of vibration of the energy in the room was so high and so intense, powerful, and that people connected. So even the speakers, all of you, one of you had said on social media, I hope that we all keep in touch.
Oh gosh, yes.
And that is so important, because these speakers came from across the country. They weren't just in San Francisco from San Francisco. They were in San Francisco from all over the country. So I do hope that they keep in touch. I hope the audience members keep in touch. And the unconscious bias exercise that I hosted there is going to pay off exponentially as we connect with people we've never met before. It eliminates affinity bias. We folks in this exercise, I ask people to connect with someone they don't know and offer to advise, refer, or hire. Learn that person's problem, learn that person's need, and fill it. Even if they don't look like you, sound like you, come from the same school, industry, background, whatever.
This is such a great exercise. Susan, congratulations on an event.
Thank you.
Well done. I can't even believe that we're up to the advice question of the show. So we're like rounding it all out. I'm going to combine this question almost like challenge advice. So Susan, what advice can you give to women, men, professionals when they face challenges, whether it's bias in communication or whatever challenges they may face in business? What do you have to say to them?
Well, I actually don't think this question has anything to do with my professional work. It's something I do every day and I live every day. And it harkens back to what you do. It is listen with empathy and not judgment. Understand, you have to read people. And if you're anxious, so find a place of peace. Be of peace of mind. And when you find that space, you're open to helping others and to hearing others and to being there for others. But if you live in a place of go, 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 anxiety, rush, got to get this done, fear, if you choose fear over love, you cannot be open to help yourself, which then means you cannot possibly be open to helping others. So find yourself, love yourself, find a place of, I think we call it self-actualization. So find your highest and best self and then share that person with others through tools like we mentioned earlier, listening with empathy and not judgment, asking powerful, meaningful questions, not how much do you make or where do you work? That, you know, you can look that up on the internet, on LinkedIn, but meaningful questions. Get to know that person from the inside out. Then when you recognize that connection, you're able to move forward in a meaningful way with advising, hiring, referring, what have you. Or even in our case, making a new friend.
Oh, that is such great advice. Thank you. And last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your book, your work?
Oh, well, thank you. I have a website. I would suggest they go to the website. The website is freemanmeansbusiness.com. And you can email me from that website as well. You can check out all the things we do, both for a living and a giving. And you can sign up for my podcasts and news blogs and so forth and so on.
Excellent. And they can also find you on social media too. How about Twitter?
Handle? There's that. I'm everywhere on social media. So I am on Instagram at Susan Claudia Freeman. And that's C-L-A-U-D-I-A. For those who've never heard of Claudia before, that's my middle name, Susan Claudia Freeman. I'm on LinkedIn at Susan C. Freeman. And I'm on Facebook at Susan C. Freeman. I am also on Pinterest just for fun. It's sort of a secret addiction that I have. But you can always find me. Connect with me on LinkedIn. That would be great. And if you want to email me straight up, it's Susan@FreemanMeansBusiness.com.
Terrific. Susan, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing all of your insights about gender bias in communication and what men and women can do and how we can move this forward and find more equity. And all of your tips are so helpful. So thank you.
You're welcome. Happy New Year, everyone.
And Happy New Year. And thank you to all of you. Welcome to a new year. It's going to be great. We appreciate everything that you're doing for the Women Worldwide Network. And please keep the feedback coming. If you want to tweet to us, post on Facebook, sign up for updates at womenworldwideshow.com. We're here for you and we are listening. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and empowered. Thank you.